Hi, I'm Matt, owner and operator of Hardscape Ottawa, a custom outdoor living design build company based in our nation's capital, Ottawa, Ontario, and I am a hardscaper.
Matt, so how did you get into hardscaping?
So I sort of bounced around a bunch of seemingly random jobs as a teenager in industries that have all inevitably had very transferable skills to owning a residential construction company, including sales and logistics, and not the least of which growing up on a farm. When I got into hardscaping around age 20 or 21, I was sort of living it up working in a nightclub on weekends and decided maybe a job cutting grass would be a good way to make some money during the week as well. My first day, I found myself not behind a lawnmower, but dropped off alone at a backyard with a wheelbarrow and four pallets of three-piece modular pavers. After a few minutes, instructions, my new boss left for the rest of the day. Later that afternoon, he returned, and I laid maybe half of those bricks about as successfully as any first-timer would have. You know, I had four corners and double dog bones and long lines everywhere, you name it. He let me know pretty quickly what was good enough and what wasn't on that. The subsequent weeks, I found myself hand-digging excavations in what I later found out is the rockiest part of the city and pushing a wheelbarrow up a 2x4 into the back of an old dump truck. For some reason, after that introduction in the industry, I stuck it out and quickly got out of the bar industry, worked my way up through landscape crews. I got to be the foreman. I was doing a lot of project management, customer support stuff as well. After 5 years in that position, I noticed a shift towards being a lot more like outdoor living experience oriented industry. I really wanted to be building that sort of cool stuff that you saw in the catalogs. And I wasn't doing that at that company. So I started Hardscape Ottawa 5 years ago.
Nice. So what kind of made you take that leap of faith to start your own business?
A big part of it was I just felt that I could do something sort of different. That was really what it was. The company that I worked for, it was a lot of very, very basic patios. We were doing one thing that we call the Orleans wave, just the driveway widening on two sides with a bit of a curve two different directions in front of the garage. And you can only build so many of those before you get sick of it. Yeah, I really just wanted to really be building those cool projects that you get to see in those catalogs. And that was my sort of number one deciding factor. I didn't really see any companies in Ottawa that sort of fit with the way that I like to work that were doing those sort of cool things. So I filled that space.
Yeah, and that's interesting that you kind of saw an opportunity, saw space that you can fill with your own business. And I think that's something that's so important with a business owner to spot that opportunity and to dive right in there. Especially as contractors, sometimes when we decide to start our own business, we don't see that space. We just see the jobs, the making the money, and that's what we dive into. Was this something that was intentional on your part to be able to find this space that your company would be able to fill, or was this something that you discovered afterwards?
This is definitely something that we progressed into. I'd be lying if I didn't say I wanted to make that owner money too. Found out pretty quickly it takes a while until you actually start making that owner money. It definitely was something that we progressed into. I am not sure that I fully fathomed as big as the outdoor living industry would become what it is today. Back then, I had a bit of an inkling, but no, I'm blown away with some of the cool stuff that we can actually build with nowadays. I mean, 5 years ago, the concept of having a water feature that spit fire out the top of it at the same time was unheard of. And now that's the sort of stuff that we're trying to add into jobs now, and definitely coming shortly.
With all your incorporation of all these different features that you're putting into these outdoor living spaces, I've seen your lighting work and all this incredible stuff that you're creating. It's obvious that you've kind of created a path for your business, and like you said, a spot in the industry or in the marketplace to fill. When was it that you started your business?
So it was 5 years ago. We just finished up our fifth year in business. It's kind of taken to this point to build up all of the branding, build up all the reputation, and get it to the point where people do sort of trust you. It's really tough whenever you're starting out. To begin, you don't necessarily have the same presence that you do after it's established for a few years.
Which leads right into talking a little bit more about sales and your process. You know, this is something that is honed over time. How do you acquire your clients? And what has been the most powerful strategy for yourself to bring in more leads to your business?
Yeah, so the majority of our clients are acquired through Google and our website. Of course, we're pretty active on Instagram as well, which is starting to gain traction with the demographic that's actually purchasing from us. But all of that leads into sales funnels on our website. that's an always developing process for me, just to, like everything else. For the upcoming sales season, I'm going to be looking into further exploring targeted advertising to people specifically looking at those features, or outdoor kitchens specifically as well. You know, as someone thinking about getting a new barbecue for their backyard, well, they're going to Google new barbecue and they'll get all of the fireplace stores around the city, but they're not necessarily hitting on someone that is saying, hey, look, I can build you an outdoor kitchen. It's a little unfortunate. I find a lot of the time whenever we go to begin a project, people have sort of bought a brand new fancy barbecue the year before, and they're a lot less open to the idea of adding an outdoor kitchen to their project because they have a brand new barbecue. And we'll also be making pages on the website that will be providing that sort of professionally installed option to those searches instead of those box store DIY ones. But it's not just necessarily about generating leads. It's about generating qualified leads, right? So the absolute best way to do that is the SEO and user experience on our website. We have a specific page on the website that breaks down every step of why our installations are sort of better than the other guys. And I specifically mention Ottawa, Interlock, and landscaping, but as often as I possibly can on those pages without coming across like a robot saying it. We have another page that, instead of having some vague write-up about sort of needing to come out to give a quote, which, by the way, is a great way to get leads. You know, you can get your foot in their door, but it's not necessarily a way to get qualified leads, right? If you're just trying to show up to every single person's house, you don't necessarily know that those are all good buyers. So my page, instead of saying, oh, we need to come out and tell you how much it'll be, it shows pictures of multiple projects that we've completed throughout different price ranges, right? So we'll have like a 5 to 15,000, 15 to 25, and then a bunch of jobs, front yard, backyard separated, in those price ranges, so people really have an idea just what they need to be budgeting to get their dream project, right? And then it also gets them thinking, hey, maybe I could add in that standalone water feature since it fits into that budget, or how cool would it be to have that fire pit, right? So that's our best way to get leads, because we look at it not as just sort of an ad on the internet with our phone number and some pictures of our work. It's a complete sales tool that we harness, and it really makes the sales process with your clientele just way easier and brings in great people to work with.
Yeah, and there's so many things that you just spoke about there that I'd like to highlight here. You talked about leads, but it's not about bringing in leads. It's not about this quantity of overflow. It's about qualified leads and leads that kind of fit your business or the customer that you're trying to draw in, which is definitely so important. And then you talked about your website and the asset that your website is, especially with SEO and how important that is. That's another passion of mine, something that I love doing, which led me into starting How to Hardscape. And it's obvious that, you know what you're doing to get in front of your customers searching specifically on Google. And I mean, when it comes to SEO, it's a lot of work up front, and you know, you won't see the rewards of that effort for a little bit of time. It takes a little bit of time. Was this the case for you as well? Did you start to see people complimenting your website or reaching out to you on Instagram? Did you see rewards right away for your efforts to create this online presence that you have for Hardscape Ottawa?
So I've been active on Instagram since the day the business began. Really didn't start hearing from any clients until about this year on it. In terms of the website, as with everything else in the business, it's always an evolving process. I put a lot of work into that website last winter, which had pretty quick rewards. This season brought in a record amount of leads for the business with very little advertising budget, and did not participate in any home shows this season, and still brought in more leads than we ever have before.
Yeah, and that's incredible. And it just, like I said, and like you've mentioned, it's that effort to, you know, put the time into investing into your website. And I mean, from that point on, you're not paying for those leads, right? Those leads are coming, and they're qualifying themselves based on what information you've put on your website. And it's obvious that you've put a lot of work into your website. At that point, somebody contacts you, potential client contacts you through your website or through your online presence. What do you do at that point when somebody contacts you?
So we actually have a great thing set up where people can book online through us. We don't actually even necessarily need to speak with potential customers through a secretary or anything like that. So they book through this this widget for the website called Calendly. That goes into my Google Calendar. I always know where I'm supposed to be. And then they fill out a questionnaire at that same time, which also forces them to go back and look at those packages section and really make sure that they understand that there is, you do have to have a specific amount of a budget to be able to work with our business. So it's a very different experience going to these sales meetings than it is in the past if you don't have all these pre-qualifying measures put in place. So we do free consultations for now. A lot of the time people who are contacting us are qualified buyers, so it's not so bad sort of running around the city a little bit in the springtime. But we do paid 3D designs. Most people that have contacted us, they've made their way through the website, right? They've read we have an explainer about the value of that paid design right beside where you book that free consultation as well, right? So a lot of the time I'm going in there and they're thinking about buying that paid design already. They just need to be spoken to or meet me and really understand that my ideas are, you know, we back it up what we say. It's really important, that distinction, though, between the free consultations and free estimates, right? It's impossible to price custom work with a standard square foot price. You need a scope of work in order to provide an exact price. So, you know, a lot of these people, they'll already know the packages on the website, right? They'll say, oh, yeah, I'm interested in that $15,000 to $25,000 backyard. For the most part, this meeting is an interview that I show that I do have the knowledge that we shared on the website, and to get a feel for how I will be to work with. Often enough, during these free consultations, people mention being a visual person. This is a great chance to show them the value of that paid 3D design. I view these consultations as a great chance to build value with every question the customer asks. So for now, we'll do those free consultations. However, often enough, those do lead to landing those paid 3D designs, as they do want to get a quote from us, right? So how do we give that quote without the scope of work? So a lot of this process is about identifying the pain point with that potential client as they're going through the procurement process of finding a contractor. So let's face it, it's an absolute nightmare for someone who doesn't know a single thing about hardscaping, trying to figure out who is a qualified contractor, right? Especially in our rapidly innovating industry, where years in business doesn't necessarily mean actual up-to-date installation best practice know-how. There's a lot of guys that have been in business for 30 years that are still just dumping a bunch of GA in the ground, right? So if I can show them those pain points, provide them with the solution of that paid design that will, you know, it'll allow them to visualize exactly what they'll be receiving better than a scribble on some graph paper, because the average person has no idea what that means, right? They don't understand what a landscape drawing means. They can't visualize it like you or I can. So along with that, being able to look at it, they also get a complete scope of work that breaks down every single material and quantity to be used, and the best practices installation recommendations on that too. You can tell them, look, like, you know, even if you buy this design, you can then take all these numbers and shop, you know, interview other contractors, but then have them estimate on that so that they're not wasting their time too much, but you can still double check that our price is fair, right? And this way they're actually going to be able to compare apples to apples quotes. Whereas the other way of kind of, oh, you know, sort of, come back, let us know your design, and we'll figure it out from there. We'll see who we like to work with. That's just not going to work, right? So it's a lot easier if they can kind of compare three quotes on the exact same design. So you'd be amazed at how many people are actually willing to pay for that. A lot of guys are sort of scared to push for it, but a lot of people are interested in that. But not every single project needs that 3D design, and not everyone is interested in it either, right? So if it does feel like that person's just trying to get me to enter into that free design contest, I'm going to say no thanks. You know, that person's wasting my time, you know, or I'll try and do it more politely. Just sort of, you know, let me know if you get a design from someone, I'd be happy to estimate on that. But other projects, they can be relatively simple. It's, oh, they need a retaining wall that's however many feet long, however many feet high. They don't need a design for that. If you have a good estimating process in place, that shouldn't take you more than a few minutes to estimate. So it's not everything is paid for, but any sort of design work we absolutely do get paid for. One of the great parts about that too is that it directly compensates you for your time designing that project, which makes it a lot easier to go home and sit on your computer after you've worked on a job site all day. And it also makes it more fair to your actual customers, who aren't then indirectly paying for those projects that you designed but didn't land, because you spent a lot of time on those and those people didn't pay you for them, right? So someone ends up paying you for that time. And it's your real customers, not the people who aren't actually your customers. So there's all those bonuses, plus you know exactly what's going to get built. And there is a lot less surprises for both you and the customer, which is going to massively increase your efficiencies.
And you spoke about so much there, and I just want to highlight that you are pre-qualifying your customers, but your website is doing that for you. You don't have to do that work anymore, right? You have something in place that, you know, customers can take a look at and see if this is for them or if it's not for them.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. It's any sort of system that you can replace what you're doing with is going to save you a lot more time. It's going to, the more time that you can spend with your guys and with your customers, the more successful your business will be. And if you're spending all your time doing free design work and free estimates, it's tough to get ahead.
Now, with your designs, I know people in my area, they offer this design service, but if the customer does not eventually go with them to do the installation, you know, they get paid for that design service. But if the customer does go with them, that design service is taken out of the overall fee for that installation. Is this something that you do, or is this a completely like different service that you are getting paid for, regardless of the installation or no installation?
So that's actually sort of, there's a lot of different answers to that question. At this point, yes, we do refund it back whenever they go with the design. It just sort of, it makes it a little less painful. Further to that, a lot of these time, these people are, they're already sort of planning on hiring us by the time they've decided to contract us for that paid design. It really does sort of, it simplifies everything for you in that sense. But if you're the owner of the business and not necessarily working on the job site, then your salary should be written into the billable hours of your employees. So technically, no matter what you do that day, you are getting paid for it as the business, right? Sometimes doing that free work in the office, you're still getting paid for it, right? So it's there's a lot of different answers to that question.
For sure. It definitely a loaded question. And I can definitely see with your designs, like once you present the customer with one of your designs kind of speak for themselves. It's kind of like another step in the sales process to get them closer to signing up an installation. Because obviously, you know, your designs are beautiful. And would you agree that, you know, once you have a customer willing to accept a design or pay for a design, you know that they're pretty much ready to sign on with your company for the installation?
Yeah, so a lot of the time it's about comfort levels, right? And someone that's already made a transaction with you already has this inherent comfort built in. So it really does make it sort of, you know, if you've solved problems for somebody before, they're going to trust you to solve problems for them again. So it really does make it a lot easier to get that sale at the end of it once you've already sort of done that primary transaction of the 3D design.
What design software are you using personally? Do you have an attachment to any of them or any design software that you'd recommend? Because I see this floating around in so many different questions from landscapers that are wanting to get into design. What do you use?
So last winter, actually, I made the switch from SketchUp, Google SketchUp, to UVision. That's the Unilock branded version of Real-Time Landscape Architect from Idea Spectrum. Whenever I was doing my research as to what program I'd want to upgrade to, it kind of seemed like it was the best bang for your buck program out there. It's a one-time pay, not a subscription base, and relatively inexpensive. That program has elevated my design game like you wouldn't believe. The big thing that it's sort of done for me is it's increased my upselling of lighting and plants and features. With SketchUp, you could easily design the hardscape and sort of say, okay, look, here's your hardscape. I think it would look pretty cool with some lights in it. Want to give me $3,000 for that? Which, you know, the answer most of the time is going to be no. But being able to easily kind of take that to night mode, put the lighting in the design, that's not even a question anymore. It's just included in the price of that complete outdoor living space. And of course it needs lighting, right? So yeah, that's I use UVision. It's a bit of a learning curve whenever you're starting it out, but it's a great program to be able to to show to your customers exactly what you can do for them without breaking the bank for you.
And obviously you talked about how you're able to sell lighting on a job because of the switch to the U-Vision. Are you using the U-Level on your job sites at all, or what are you doing with that?
So we don't have a U-Level. We have a more traditional laser level, and sometimes we have a zip level that one of our foremen brings in. But yeah, we're definitely using grading tools such as that. But no, I don't have a U-Level quite yet.
So when you're meeting with a customer and you're talking about the designs, what questions are you asking your customer to be able to understand what you're going to be designing for them in terms of products and everything that's going into that design?
So my first question that I ask people when I'm going to design their landscape is, how do you want to use this space? I kind of get the sense that a lot of guys aren't really asking that question out there. A lot of the time customers are sort of blown away when I ask them that. It's really the most important thing to be asking in my mind. They're going to end up the happiest with their custom designed landscape if it's tailor-made to their specific needs, right? From there, you sort of know how many rooms you're designing in that space. Usually you sort of have the kitchen and dining area, whether it's an outdoor kitchen or just that standalone barbecue, and then they'll have the table and chairs to eat at. And then maybe a lounging area as well, if they plan to use the space quite a bit. Other things they might want, the hot tub or a place to play for the kids, or they're really into gardening and they want a bunch of gardens, whatever it is, right? We go there from there with the design. One question I really like to stay away from that I used to ask years ago is, do you like curvy or straight? You're going to find yourself building a lot of sort of designs that are curvy for no reason. A lot of customers, they're a little bit scared by really sort of harsh terms like straight or hard lines, right? No, it's really about how you phrase a lot of these things to your customers. Using sort of fluffier terminology than if you and I are talking or other landscape contractors are talking to each other. You know, the better way to ask, instead of do you like straight, say, do you like more modern things? Or instead of curvy, do you like a more traditional design? And that's going to kind of give you a sense as to what product types you're going to use. But a lot of the time, you know, curvy or straight, it's you're putting too much of the design into their hands, right? And as I said, this terminology is a big thing about it too, because I've sort of always really liked the look of a running bond pattern, the inlays or as the main field, whatever. But a lot of customers, they'll perceive that as that more traditional thing, right? They're, ooh, that's sort of old style. They just kind of think about the 4x8s, right? But if you start referring to that as a subway tile pattern instead of a running bond pattern, then they absolutely love it. So yeah, a lot about it is just the way that you speak with terms changes how you're perceived a lot, and that with your questions and with the things that you posit to your customers.
Yeah, language is so important. You know, let's take this to the consultation. When you show up to that first consultation, before you're getting into the design process and everything like that, you step out of the truck. What do you have in your hand? Like, what are you going to that customer with? And where do you take it from there?
So I carry very minimal things to that first consultation. Basically, I show up with a tape measure. I have this thing called a blackboard boogie board, which is an erasable piece of graph paper that it's a sort of a plastic like tablet that I can then scan with my phone that goes tied to the meeting into my Google Drive, and I can then transfer that into U-Vision, bring that into scale, and start designing right on top of it. So I actually don't even have a notepad with me anymore. So tape measure, my blackboard, and I'll maybe bring a Tekko Block catalog, or I'll bring a sample of artificial turf if they've indicated that that's something that they wanted to purchase on in their questionnaire. But yeah, not very much in my hands these days.
So you know, you've got the design questions. You know what kind of direction you're going to take your design at this point. Where do you take it from here with the customer? Where are you going to next after this initial consultation and once you have this design created?
Yeah, so from there, doing that with the paid designs, I'll edit that into a nice little presentable movie with our logo on it and send that over to them with their estimate. Usually, people will want me to come see them from there to discuss some details and things like that. And yeah, then we sign it from there and move on with the project.
How long would this take you approximately from after the initial consultation, from sitting down with that initial sketch on your blackboard to the final product design in movie? How long do you think like that approximately would take you? And I know it depends on definitely the scale of the project.
Anywhere from about 2 to 4 hours to do the design, about half an hour to do an estimate from there with the system that I have in place. That's sort of how I based the pricing structure off doing these 3D designs, is basically kind of just picked an hourly rate for myself for doing it and based that off of roughly 6 hours for the go to visit them, take some measurements, come back, do all the design.
Once you've got that job signed up, I want to talk about a little bit more into kind of how you structure your contracts in terms of payment plans, because this is a hot topic. I know we get a lot of questions about how do you create payment plans with your customer. I know a very popular thing to do is take 50% up top and leave the 50% remaining at the end of the job when it's complete. But this, I mean, there's so many complications with this. How do you structure your payment plans with your customers?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right about that. The complications with that 50-50 system, it really sort of, a lot of customers are very uncomfortable with that, right? Especially if you're taking 50% before you've even started the project. Our payment plans are specific to each job. Some of them will work on draw systems, others just percentage systems, depending on the scope of the project, right? At signing, we ask for a non-refundable deposit, 10%, no matter what. It doesn't matter the size of the project. That's going to make sure that the customer actually sticks with you, right? If you take nothing, it's easy enough for them to just decide to go with some other guy that could start earlier, right? So really tough to plan your season like that. After that 10% on a smaller job that's going to be sort of a week or less, yeah, we'll likely take 50% whenever we come start digging the project. Often there's a sort of a hold on checks anyway, so we're not going to get that money until the job's finished anyways. Yeah, so we'll take a 50% when we start digging, and then the day we finish, you know, 3 to 5 days later, we'll take a 30%, and then give them a few days with their space with the final 10% on that. Yeah, as we said, on that, on a larger project, someone is not going to be comfortable paying 50% just because you're digging a hole that's going to take, you know, a week and a half before there's any materials on top of it. So we work on draw systems for that, right? Based off, it'll be the 10% up front, and then 20% on dig day, and then, you know, another X amount percent whenever the pavers are delivered, another X amount percent whenever the pavers are installed or walls installed and sand installed, things like that. So based off of completion of items on that, that's how you work those draw systems, which is a way to make it feel comfortable for you and for the customer, right? Because that it's really important in that relationship that there's just that sort of equal comfort level. Otherwise, things get a little hairy, as long as you never leave yourself vulnerable in that too, right? We're contractors, not banks. And a lot of the time, the horror stories that you hear on the contractor's end of things are because they let the customer sort of treat them as that, or sort of left themselves very vulnerable, right? That's it's important to kind of find that balance of you being safe or being comfortable.
Matt, do you have any horror stories that you'd want to share on this podcast? I know I don't want to take a negative turn in this interview in any sense, but a lot of these stories that can be shared can really help new contractors put systems in place to avoid maybe some horror stories that could happen to them. Do you have anything you'd want to share?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, we have horror stories. There's, I think you'd be hard pressed to find any contractor that doesn't have the odd one. It's with the fact that a lot of the people that are buying from contractors sort of have this inherent belief that contractors are untrustworthy. There is enough customers, and not all of them, but there is enough customers out there that are sort of looking to take advantage of us back, even if we are honest contractors that are not looking to take advantage of somebody. So you definitely need to be careful as a business owner. But putting that payment draw method and very clear communication on change orders with your customers is the key to avoiding any of those sort of horror stories. And with all these systems in place, it's been a few years now since we really had sort of any of those pull your hair out issues where it might lose our shirt on them.
Getting into your installations, installation methods, products, tools, anything that you use on the job site or anything you want to talk about. I know we've dived really deep into your sales and your design, but is there anything you'd want to share with our audience about things you're passionate about, things that you love on the job site?
Yeah, so we, you're absolutely right. We probably need to record another podcast to get into all of my rules to live by in the installations. But I think the biggest money-making installation solution that I have in place is designing into the materials that we're using. Make it just, you know, try not to add cut day on a project that doesn't need it, right? Make sure that you're using the right products in that application as well, so that you're not using something that's just way too big to fit into a space or things like that, right? So I also do my best to design a lot of these things so that they don't come tight into fences or trap ourselves into corners. So a lot of the time you can just sort of lay full pavers and that's that, right? It saves you a lot of time, make you a lot of money. In terms of sort of products that we swear by, if you're working with a proper overhead recovery system in your business, the customer is paying for these materials, not you, right? So the cost of those materials does not change your bottom line and in any way other than you would make more if you're making a percentage off selling that material. So because of that, we always do our absolute best to install just the best products that we can find. If you keep doing a quality installation with quality products, then your reputation of being a quality company will come pretty quickly.
I like that you talked about designing with products in mind and how that can save you so much time. You're talking about cut days, you know, all these things that it can save you on. Is there a specific product that you go to a job site in mind as like a default product to show a customer to say, hey, we really love this product, but we can get into different types of products with you? Do you have something like that in mind that you show up to a customer as like a default thing to show them to start your conversation towards different products?
You know, there's a lot of guys that will just sort of send their customers to the Brickyard and say, here, go look at these products. Let me know what you like. That ends in heartache a lot of the time. You'll end up trying to build with materials that don't necessarily work for what you're trying to do. A lot of the time, if you have a complete outdoor living space in mind, there's products that work for it and products that don't, right? So a lot of the time, because you've come up with this whole design, the customer will just full on say, you know, I trust you with the materials. And it's a lot of the time I just sort of say, look, this is what I want to build with. And they'll say, yeah, we trust you, that we think that'll look great. So the actual products in mind, it really depends on my mood for that project, I suppose. Definitely I have some go-tos, but nothing that is a go-to product along every single project because they are so different.
Now, Matt, do you have any mentors or people that in your network that you get inspiration from or any resources that you want to give a shout out that you really enjoy?
Yeah, so obviously being very active on Instagram, we get to interact with a lot of the kind of the big hitters in the industry right now. And I think for this year, I think the top of anybody's list for inspiration has to be Sean at Premier Outdoor. He and I have a pretty similar design style and we get the chance to bounce ideas off each other a couple times this season. And that guy is just absolutely killing it at social media lately, right? So that's inspiring me to sort of step up my video editing and social marketing game as well. Tony from Group Zamco, he's another guy that I'll toss ideas about brick combos at and stuff. And some of the projects that those guys build are just absolutely insane. Always thinking outside the box on lighting options and different inlay products. Definitely have to give a shout out to Bobby Blocks and Alex from TechoBlock. Alex is an invaluable resource to me, and Bobby's involvement and active engagement in the hardscape and social media world has helped grow our following on Instagram just absolutely immensely too. As well, definitely I'd want to recommend a couple guys that are authors that for contractors. One would be Sean Van Dyke, who wrote a book called Profit First for Contractors. That book will show you the exact formulas that you need to put in place to know how to have a overhead recovery system for your business and make sure that you're actually making money. And another guy is Martin Holsinger, who wrote a book called Contractor Marketing Simplified. Those two books, you shouldn't be running a contracting business without reading those two. Other guys on Instagram would be Caleb from Ottoman's Landscaping. I love getting involved with that guy's stories. Jeff from Alliance Gator has been just working his butt off lately with his online presence as well. And then more locally, my buddy Chad at Natural Design Landscapes and Thomas from Lifelong Landscaping. We're always sort of in each other's DMs. Lots of other guys. I hope I didn't miss too many people, but yeah, lots of guys out there.
Yeah, and there's so much inspiration to draw from within this industry. Especially on Instagram being such a visual platform and being able to see what these guys have got going on in their businesses. And of course, with your own business, Matt, yourself, some really interesting designs that you've come up with. And, one that definitely pops to mind is your Hexa paver tackle block install on that walkway. It was a really interesting one. Where did you come up with that design? What made you want to incorporate that tackle block product into that walkway?
That is definitely inspired by the flooring world. You see a lot of this sort of hardwood flooring cut into the hexagon tile brick in people's foyers. So I kind of figured, okay, well, that's on the inside of a lot of people's doors these days in more modern homes. So why not just have it on the outside of the door? And I think now they're looking at renovating their kitchen. They've already sort of got it all gutted at that home, and they sort of changed up their game plan, and now they're gonna come out of hexagon tile into the hardwood that they move on there too. So it definitely inspired by the flooring world. And then that Hexa brick is just a really cool product, and couldn't wait to use it. So pushed to get it out down on the ground as quick as we could. Don't think we were quite exactly the first company in Ottawa, but very, very close to install it. So pretty cool product, and definitely wanted to use it as soon as we could.
Wrapping this interview up, I want to ask you, because when you're a business owner, you're constantly adapting, evolving, and learning. What is that one thing you wish you would have known from the very beginning when you first started your company? What's the one thing that you know now that you wish you'd known from the very beginning?
The thing that I wish I had known when I started my company is just how much it is actually running a business. I knew a whole bunch of stuff about landscaping when I started this company, and not a whole lot about running a business, right? So it started off relatively small. I was kind of trying to get any sort of work that I could get my hands on through all the traditional advertising avenues, the word of mouth, tell your aunts and uncles, stuff like that, like stapling business cards to tackle block door hangers that they handed out. And then I'd get phone calls from old ladies angry that robbers would know they weren't home. I had a shoebox full of receipts, just sort of desperately trying to figure out how to price projects off what anyone else in the industry would tell me about the sort of standard square foot pricing. At this point, we've turned into a business with well-organized books. As I said, we have that profit first overhead recovery system in place, and we're building these complete outdoor living spaces, creating careers for guys, a future for myself. I didn't necessarily know what I was really getting into at the time. So I kind of buckled down. I read every single book on marketing and sales and business and finance and anything that I could find, and got sort of a little bit different version of a university education on how to run a business. And I sort of wish I had known what I was getting into, I suppose.
Thank you so much, Matt, for joining us here on the How to Hardscape podcast. We really appreciate you dropping in.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Mike. It's absolute honor to be on this podcast that in its infantile stages has already had some amazing guests who are phenomenal voices and leaders in this industry. And I hope I was able to offer a little bit of value today as well.